It's the Chronicles of Aguna, the Arsenal podcast brought to you by 90 Min, and we are live.
You're listening to the Chronicles of Aguna, the Arsenal podcast.
I'm Martin Tyler, and you're listening to Harry Simeon.
Hello and welcome back to the Chronicles of Aguna, the Arsenal podcast brought to you by 90 Min. As ever, I'm your host, Harry Simeon, and on this edition, we're going to be discussing the news regarding Thomas Partey. We're going to be discussing the news regarding Kieran Tierney, and we're going to be looking ahead to the game against Leeds United coming up this Sunday, Valentine's Day, of course. What better treat for your partners than for them to have to sit alongside you and watch the mighty Arsenal against Leeds. It beats going out on Valentine's Day, put it that way. It's a shame we can't go to the game, but there you go. So on this show, that's what we're going to be looking at. I'll be sharing with you guys my starting 11, the starting 11 that I would pick if I were in charge of the side on Sunday. And of course, a prediction. Also be taking some of your comments and questions from the live chat as well. So feel free to drop those into the conversation too. And yeah, let's get into it. Really, I want to be positive, right? I really do. And I have been quite positive, I think, over the last few weeks when people have been asking questions about Mikel Arteta for the most part. And I have had wobbles, you know, like everybody else has. I have had wobbles and at times felt that, you know, maybe we did make a mistake hiring him. Maybe somebody, you know, more experienced would have been better suited to the job. I don't know. I have had wobbles at times, but for the most part, as I say, I've been pretty positive around Mikel Arteta and I've been willing to give him the benefit of the doubt. And for that reason, I think overall I've been quite positive. I can't help but feel negative though about a couple of issues in our team right now. And it's not a reflection of Mikel Arteta. It's not anything that Mikel Arteta has done wrong, I don't think. But I am worried about the fitness of Thomas Partey. I am worried about the fitness of Kieran Tierney. Now, when it comes to Kieran Tierney, you know, we've seen him break down in an Arsenal shirt before. This is not the first time and it certainly won't be the last. And having heard last week that the club had done their scans and there had been no signs of any significant damage or any significant injury, a part of me was hopeful that he would be back and available and at least ready to participate in the squad for this Sunday's game. Now, I'm really, you know, I've been a massive fan of Cedric lately. I think he's done really, really well. And you've got to add to the fact that not only has he come in from the cold, essentially, and been asked to play in a number of important games for Arsenal Football Club. He's also now having to contend with playing on the wrong side. And he's done that, in my opinion, very, very well. He made a mistake. He made a mistake in the game against Aston Villa at the weekend, for which we were punished. And unfortunately, Arsenal weren't good enough on the day to find a way back into the game to put that right and to essentially pick up some points. It's not that I don't like Cedric. It's not that I want to, you know, dig him out. I just feel like as good as he's been, we're still missing something. Having a right-footed player playing at left back, it doesn't matter who it is. It doesn't matter if you put Fabio Cannavaro at left back. You know, it ain't going to work because what it does is it disrupts the flow of your attacks. It makes it more difficult to defend. It makes you predictable when going forward as well. And I think Kieran Tierney's been a massive miss. And I do worry about his fitness. I've seen people sort of suggesting that, you know, he gets so many muscle injuries. Maybe he should try wearing tracksuit bottoms and a jumper to keep his muscles warm when he's out there training in the freezing cold. And people are sort of getting excited about the fact that he's a real man and he's tough and all of that. You know, it just, you know, that could be a factor. I'm not saying it's the factor, but, you know, it is a valid point, isn't it? You know, keep your muscles warm, look after yourself. Does Kieran Tierney look after himself as well as he possibly can? Only he really knows the answer to that. But I am worried about the fact that he's still out, and it's a leg strain now, which is what we've been told. No further detail on that, but that's what we've been told. And then we come on to Thomas Partey, whose injury record prior to joining Arsenal Football Club was pretty much impeccable. It was very good. It was as good as a footballer at the top level who plays in the centre of midfield, who's involved in the engine room of teams. It's as good as a player of that profile, I think, could have expected or could have wanted. And all of a sudden, Thomas Partey is constantly breaking down. He initially broke down in that game against Aston Villa. And then, you know, he was obviously substituted at half time, and he wasn't to be seen again for a few weeks. He then got brought back in the North London derby, and again, Thomas Partey broke down. And then we gradually worked him back to fitness, and now we've ended up in a position where we've lost him again. And I wonder if the intensity in the Premier League, which is a level above that in La Liga, you know, that's not to say that that Diego Simeone is not an intense coach, or that his team were not giving 100%, but it does feel like the step up in intensity in the Premier League is maybe being a little bit difficult for Thomas Partey to adapt to adjust to. Is it that his pre-season was not ideal? Is it that he's just been unfortunate? You know, I don't know what the reason is, what the underlying issue is, but when you go out and you spend £45 million on a central midfield player, you want him available. And I think it's abundantly clear what a difference he makes to our team. You know, you talk about Arsenal with and without Thomas Partey, and the difference is huge. Mohamed Elneny can do you a job from time to time, but he's not as dynamic as Partey. He won't play the ball forward like Partey does. He doesn't really have the ability to pick up the ball and drive you forward as a team. I don't think he has the reading of the game that somebody like Thomas Partey has. I think Dani Ceballos for Sunday is probably a slightly better option, but we'll come on to that in a bit. But what I'm trying to say is the drop-off between Arsenal's first choice centre midfielders, and I'm talking about Granit Xhaka and Thomas Partey, whether you like Xhaka or not, the reality is that pair are Mikel Arteta's go-to pair. And the point I'm making is that the drop-off between them, their standard, their level, and those on the outside waiting in the wings at the moment is massive. And so every time Thomas Partey picks up an injury, you worry about how Arsenal are going to cope through this period. Now, We've been told it's a hamstring injury. We got the club's update today. It was just a tweet coming out. And the minute you saw the tweet, you knew that the news was going to be bad, because it wasn't XYZ is going to return, are available for selection at the weekend. It was, here's our team news update ahead of Sunday's Premier League match against Leeds United. So it was kind of ominous from the beginning. So just touching on that team news, we know that Bern Leno's available again, and so is David Luiz, after the pair have served their one-match suspensions for their respective red cards at Wolves. And as far as Thomas Partey goes, this is what the club had to say in their official communication. Thomas sustained a strain to his left hamstring during last Saturday's match at Aston Villa and will miss the match against Leeds United on Sunday. Thomas will continue to be assessed and rehabilitate from his injury. So no indication as to how long Thomas Partey could be out for. But when it's a hamstring, you're normally talking about 3 weeks, all being well. You know, it's very rare that people return from a hamstring strain in less than 3 weeks. I think it's a worrying injury, and it's one that you hope you don't have to deal with too many times in your career. But that's the latest on Thomas Partey. And as for Kieran Tierney, according to the club, he's recovering well from a strain to the right lower leg and is aiming to integrate back into training next week. So at least with Kieran Tierney, there's an end in sight. You know, we're expecting him to be integrated back into the group for training next week. So yeah, let's see how that goes. But we've heard stuff like that before. Louis Robson in the chat points out that Chris Weasley said on Twitter that he's out for 2 weeks. hopefully that is the case. But again, with a hamstring, it's not the type of injury that you can afford to take risks over. And, you know, I am frustrated by Thomas Partey's fitness sort of record since he's come to the Emirates. But I'm also not naive enough to think that the desperation, the need for Arsenal to pick him week in, week out, you know, that's not helped. You know, let's put it that way. That has not helped Thomas Partey whatsoever. You could argue that he never fully recovered from previous issues. And I know the issues are not always necessarily related, but it just feels like he's being forced back. He's being rushed back out of desperation. And off the back of that, we are now missing one of our key, most important, and arguably one of our best players for longer periods of time. And it's kind of frustrating, because I was having this conversation with a couple of people yesterday. Did we leave ourselves short by letting Matteo Guendouzi and Lucas Torreira go out? You know, I mean, they're both on loan. We're not benefiting financially, really, from any of those two players being out there playing for other clubs. I know there were issues with Guendouzi's attitude and all of that. But has Mikel Arteta's, I don't want to say rush, because I think we all agree that players needed to be moved out, but has Mikel Arteta's decision to move some of those players out at the time he moved them out? You know, we moved out Guendouzi, we moved out Torreira in the summer, and we only really got one centre midfielder in. So has that rush to do that now left us a little bit short? And would Matteo Guendouzi be able to fill in that Thomas Partey role, if you like, to a higher level than Mohamed Elneny? I would say he probably could. And you've also got to look at the fact that, yes, Ceballos has done okay at times, but he's not the same profile of player. So in terms of balance, in terms of finding that sweet spot in the midfield, in terms of finding the ideal combination, or as close to the ideal combination as we possibly can with the players at our disposal, I do worry that Mikel Arteta may have left himself a little bit short. Now, hindsight is a wonderful thing, right? It really is. And none of us envisaged when we signed Thomas Partey, looking at his history, that he would miss so many games. But we are in that situation now. And does a manager, does a head coach have to account for these things? Can he account for these things? Let me know in the chat. Has Mikel Arteta left us a little bit short in not just the centre midfield, but in a couple of positions? Because also, we've moved out Seja Kolasinac. And I know a lot of people are not majorly keen on him anymore and feel that his time at Arsenal had come to an end. But given that we've loaned him out for the last, 6 months of his contract, could we not have kept him? Could we not have been a little bit selfish and said, we might need this guy at some point? Because for all the good things Cedric has done, in an attacking sense, actually, Seja Kolasinac is not that bad. You know, defensively, there are question marks over him for sure. But there have been defensive question marks over Cedric as well at times. And that's largely down to him having to play on the wrong side. I think you can play on the wrong side as a winger. I don't think it's that much of an issue in an attacking sense. But when you're forced to defend, I think it can be a problem. And I do worry that, as I said, in a couple of positions, perhaps Mikel Arteta has left us just a tad short. But again, let me know what you guys think in the live chat. Always interested to hear what you guys have to say, of course. Let's look ahead to the game against Leeds United. And I beg your pardon, someone's pointed out in the chat that the Kolasinac contract has got another year. You're absolutely right. I beg your pardon. You're absolutely right. First of all, before we go on to look at Leeds in a little bit more detail, let's see what you guys are saying in the chat about the kind of the things that we've discussed. Steve Stone says, I'm frustrated with Partey not playing, but we cannot rush him back. Louis Robson agrees with me that maybe we left ourselves a little bit too short. Baker Man says we could use Torreira right about now. Keir Ellis says that no left-footed left-back has screwed us. Connor Bradley says, yep, losing them two and reintegrating a poorer player in Elneny was pretty stupid. Louis Robson says, hold on, I've already touched on that. Let's pick up a couple more. Wes Bird says, we've had an issue with getting players back for 15 years. Remember Wenger saying that he was worried reoccurring injuries and not getting players back? Yep, it's a great point. Ray Anderson says, if Torreira and Guendouzi didn't go out on loan in the summer, we would have had to leave more players out of the squad. That's a really, really good point as well. It is a really, really good point. Agreed. Connor Bradley says that Torreira was unsettled, though, and Guendouzi's issues were well documented, so it's tough. But I agree on Kolasinac. What else have we got? Just picking out a few more of your comments. Wesbird says, regardless of Guendouzi's attitude, he would have been a better option than Elneny. Patrick says, people said play Partey, he has to be fit already. Arteta plays him and people say he shouldn't have played him. Sometimes this fan base truly frustrates me. Yeah, look, and as I said, look, hindsight is a wonderful thing, obviously, and it's much easier to sit here behind the microphone and, you know, and dig Mikel Arteta out for maybe rushing him back. And I wouldn't say I'm digging him out. I'm just asking the question as to whether that's played a part in Partey's injuries or whether it is just down to rotten luck, you know. As I say, it's very easy to sit behind a microphone and say Arteta should have done this, he should have done that. But the reality is when you're in a slump, when you're losing football matches and the pressure's on, and make no mistake about it, prior to that win against Chelsea on Boxing Day, the pressure on Mikel Arteta was intensifying with every passing week. So on that basis, you know, maybe Mikel Arteta felt he had no choice. And as I said, I'm not pointing the finger at Mikel Arteta for Thomas Partey's injury problems. What I'm saying is because we left ourselves short, because we are so reliant on him, Mikel Arteta will probably struggle to leave him out. And, you know, you can argue that when a player is as good as Thomas Partey can be at his maximum, at his peak level, then, of course, it's always difficult to leave them out, whether it's due to fitness or whatever. So, yeah, it's a really difficult one, this. You know, who do you blame? Probably no one. Probably is down to rotten luck more than anything else, but it is incredibly frustrating because I think we all appreciate what a difference he makes when he's at full flow. Steve Stone says, Guendouzi's attitude stinks. I'm not over impressed with his football either. Too slow and constantly gets caught on the ball. Don Giovanni says, you're being generous, failing to secure a like-for-like option for Tierney, knowing his injury history and his importance, was negligent. Yeah, and I agree, and I think that's why I'm going back to the Kolasinac point. Now, a lot of people will argue, oh, well, say Kolasinac is not good enough anyway. We don't want him anywhere near our team anyway. But the reality is, in terms of being a natural left back, he is like for like. He was already at the club, so it wasn't costing us a thing. And when we constantly get told that the January transfer window is notoriously difficult to do deals in, and it's very difficult to prize players away from their respective clubs because, of course, those clubs are worried and fear not being able to bring in a replacement, then keeping Kolasinac was the bare minimum that Arsenal could have done. So, yeah, it is frustrating. And going back to the Arteta point, Inter Yanan, big critic of Mikel Arteta on this channel, says, Harry would like to point out Tuchel has a style of play after five games, yet Arteta still hasn't got a sustainable style of play in 14 months. I mean, come on, let's be fair and acknowledge that Thomas Tuchel has walked into a team of stars. You know, he's got a £70 million creative midfielder. He's got Hakim Ziyech has been brought in last summer. He's got Timo Werner, who everybody and anybody wanted him during the summer, whether it's worked out so far or not. You know, he's got plenty of talent in that Chelsea side, man. I mean, he's even leaving N'Golo Kante on the bench. That's how much talent he's got in that Chelsea side. It's very difficult to compare the two jobs when you know that one club have just spent in excess of, what, £250 million in rebuilding their team and bringing in talent in all areas. And you're talking about Arsenal, who have to sell to buy, have brought in a goalkeeper on loan from Brighton, and brought in an attacking midfielder from Real Madrid. Why? Because the reality is we can't afford to do anything else. The situations, Arsenal and Chelsea, incomparable for me. You know, I think we are starting to see a style of play at Arsenal. But I also think that other factors have played a massive part in Mikel Arteta finding himself in the position that he's in now. Not saying I accept it, not saying it's good enough, not saying I like it, but that's the reality. Arsenal as a football club are broken in so many ways. You know, behind the scenes, things have been shit for years. On the pitch, things have been shit for years. So you don't just click your fingers and all of that changes. You know, there's going to be there has to be a rebuild. That's what we're seeing right now. And often, you know, you're going to suffer pain when you go for a rebuild. That's the way things work. That's the way life works. Anything you do, if you have an established business and you decide to close it down and then you want to start again, only so much of what you did previously is going to help you. You know, the rest of it, it is an issue again, and it's something that needs work and effort. And all I'm saying is, look, when it comes to Mikel Arteta and the wider discussion, because a lot of you have been on to me since the podcast I did yesterday with Dan Potts, you know, about Mikel Arteta and whether the process is working, whether we're progressing. The reality is that you've got to understand where Arsenal are or were when he took over. And we were a side in dire straits. That's why Unai Emery got sacked. Arsenal were not a club who pulled a trigger on managers when they're underperforming. Arsene Wenger had many, many years whereby the wider fan base, the club probably even themselves, would have looked at what he did and said, we underachieved. Yet they never pulled the trigger. And they still didn't pull the trigger at the end. You know, I know they probably gave him a little bit of a shove. But the point I'm making is Arsenal are not notorious for changing managers like Chelsea. You know, Chelsea changed managers more than Abramovich probably changes his underwear. And, you know, that's the way they work. That's the way they operate. That's their business model. Fine. Can't knock it. It works. But at Arsenal, things are very, very different. And for Unai Emery to be sacked after, what, 18 months in the job tells you a lot about where the club feel they had got or ended up under his management, not just on the pitch, but off of it as well. There were so many underlying issues. Unai Emery was responsible for what was happening on the pitch. But then we ended up with a stock up of shit players that some people behind the scenes brought in that Unai Emery didn't even want. And the whole thing was just a mixed mash and a mess. And Arsenal were in a mess when Unai Emery got fired. So to bring someone in to clean up what you obviously believe is a massive mess and then to push them out the door when they haven't even had a full season yet feels premature and feels very, very harsh. Osman Ali says, we lose crucial players too. Eduardo's injury led to us losing the title in 08. Santi's injury in 2016 and Partey and Tierney injuries will lead to us missing the top six. Yeah, I mean, don't underestimate how significant these injuries are, right? You know, we're talking about injuries to two of our best players. We're not talking about two players that will be in the team, but we have capable deputies for. You know, when you take Kieran Tierney out of the side, the drop-off in terms of quality at left-back is huge. When you take Thomas Partey out of the midfield, the drop-off between him and Mohamed Elneny or Danny Ceballos or whoever it is you want to put in there is also extremely significant. And that's the reality, you know. These injuries are costing us. And they will continue to cost us. Hence why, at the start of the program, I expressed how worried I am about the fact that these two players who we've really hung our hat on, you know, 25 million on a left back on Kieran Tierney, 45 million on Thomas Partey, they're major investments for a club who financially for the last few years have been on their knees. Those are major investments. And my fear is that those investments are not going to work out, not because they're not good enough footballers, but because they're unable to stay fit. Banos also points out, shouldn't have sent Ainsley Maitland-Niles out on loan. Was that wise? Is that another, you know, example of Mikel Arteta in his ruthlessness, leaving Arsenal as a club a little bit short, in terms of their own players? I don't know. We'll have to wait and see. Michael Grayson says, my guess is that they thought they would bring in another left back, but it didn't happen. Yeah, and I'm, from what I hear as well, from what I understand, that was the case. There was an attempt, there was an effort to try and get a left back in, but unfortunately, it wasn't to be. Peter Redpath says, surely the focus is getting the two players fit for the Europa League games. Now, you look at those Europa League games and you look at when they're coming up. You know, we're talking about next Thursday, Arsenal travel to Rome to play Benfica. Yes, I've got that right. It's not a mistake. Arsenal are traveling to Rome to play Benfica. But you look at that, and Thomas Partey certainly doesn't look, if he's just picked up a hamstring injury last Saturday, you know, you take it on to this Saturday and then the next Saturday, Thomas Partey's not making that. Thomas Partey's not making that. And I would question whether Thomas Partey would even be available for the second leg the week after as well. Because hamstring injuries, they don't just disappear overnight. It's a horrible injury. It's a very difficult one to recover from. So, yeah, I am worried about both of them and their potential availability for the Europa League. More so with Thomas Partey. I think if Tierney returns to training next week, there's a good chance he'll be back for that. But are we finding ourselves in a situation now where you look at that fixture list? So I've taken it on from the game against Leeds United, which of course takes place this Sunday. And you look at that, Benfica, Manchester City and Benfica again. Would you, if you were Mikel Arteta, just abandon that game against Manchester City? And I mean, by that, I mean, would you rotate? Would you prioritise the Europa League? You know, we tried to prioritise the Premier League over the FA Cup and we thought it all worked when we picked up the 3 points at Southampton, but subsequent defeats at Wolves and at Aston Villa have left us in a really rotten position in the Premier League. This is the thing, isn't it? Mikel Arteta has to find the right balance now, because if Mikel Arteta says, I am going to focus solely on the Europa League and ends up finishing 12th, 13th, and then Arsenal end up not winning the Europa League, which is a strong possibility. It's a cup competition. Anything can happen. You can get a difficult draw. Then Mikel Arteta would finish the season with people going, well, he took us backwards. Mikel Arteta took over and Arsenal ended up finishing in a lower league position than they did before. Or does he still have to chase an improved league position? Because if he does improve the league position and Arsenal don't win anything, then he can then turn around and those who support him and those who back him will point to the fact that there is some improvement. It might not be enough, but the fact that we improved on last year's league position suggests that there was some progress. It's very difficult whether Mikel Arteta will be so confident of his position, so comfortable in his own skin, so comfortable with the fact that regardless of what happens, he will be in the dugout at the Emirates Stadium next season. I think if he does abandon the Premier League and focus solely on the Europa League, which is obviously a greater risk because it's a one-off game. You play one-off games, you play ties, you know, and you don't know who you're going to face. You don't know who you're going to get. I think if Mikel Arteta bombs out the Premier League and focuses solely on the Europa League, that suggests to me he's been given guarantees. And I think this is the case anyway. But that would suggest to me that he knows whatever happens, if Arsenal finish in the bottom half of the table or not, he will still be in the job next season. And I know a lot of people aren't going to want to hear that, but I do think that is the situation. Omar says, how about we promote the kid from the academy, Joel Lopez? There's a lot of positive talk around Joel Lopez, and I wouldn't be dead against that given the situation we find ourselves in. But I would be lying. I would be lying if I said that I know a great deal about him and I can tell you that he's ready for the first team. I don't know. Josh says, signing Partey on deadline day was completely unnecessary. Should have signed him day one of the window. Lots of you feeling as though we just haven't necessarily we just haven't necessarily done our business in the right way. But on the other, there's a massive caveat to that. And the caveat to that is that, did Arsenal have the funds to do the deal? Did Arsenal really have, you know, for example, with Thomas Partey, right? We know that the Kroenkes stepped in, right? And they did what they did, and they restructured bits and pieces, or they agreed to restructure certain things in order to allow Arsenal to do that deal. But it took till deadline day because Arsenal were desperate to get someone in and had to do that. And only at the end of the window, when everything else had failed, when their pursuit of Houssem Aouar fell away, did Arsenal manage to persuade the ownership that this needed to happen. So, you know, it's all good saying that, you know, that we should have done business earlier. Most of the time, I agree with that. Most of the time, I agree that often business is done towards the end of the window because that's just the way it is. But in the case of Thomas Partey, where he had a very clear release clause, and if Arsenal were going to play it anyway, then they might as well have done it at the beginning. And we would have had a player who had already integrated with the side, and things would have been a little bit clearer. So, yeah. Look, we've been really unlucky with injuries to key players this season. And in a climate where all you bloody hear about is Liverpool and how they've got no centre-backs, blah, 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 blah. You know, actually, we've been equally as unlucky with injuries to key players. Maybe they haven't been out for 9 months in one go, but they're constantly breaking down. Kieran Tierney's constantly breaking down. Thomas Partey's constantly breaking down. And you are talking about two key cogs in this team. You're talking about two very, very important players. Big hello to the Blind Gooner. Get over there and subscribe to his channel as well. Great friend is Daniel, doing some great work. Had Fabrizio Romano on the other day, so head over there and check that out. He says, evening, Harry. Saturday's game is a must-win game. There must be something wrong with the medical department to always keep getting these injuries. Perhaps players are being rushed back. I don't know. We'll have to see. We will have to see. But we will never really know, will we? I mean, you know, that's the reality of it. We will never really know what conversations take place between Mikel Arteta and the medical staff. We all know that, you know, if you've played football, you'll know that you can feel fine in training, feel fine in a warm-up, and then once that intensity level jumps up, all of a sudden you've got a problem. So we've got to be aware of that as well. Right, just before we bomb on, in the podcast, then we continue. Just a quick reminder, it's not a reminder because they've returning to sponsor the Chronicles of Aguna podcast, and all the podcasts across the 90 Minute Network at the moment is the brilliant manscaped.com. So if you're looking to get yourself nice and trim for the Valentine's Day celebrations this weekend, get over to manscaped.com, order yourself the Lawnmower 2.0. What a piece of equipment. Enter the discount code, which I will share with you guys across the bottom of the screen in just a moment. Enter the discount code and you will receive 20% off. So do check that out. Let me just get that discount code for you now. I should have done this already. Should have had it ready. So you will get 20% off and free shipping with the code. And that code for us now is... What have I done with it? 90min20. So 90min20. So that's the promo code. If you're with 90min... it's please use promo code 90min20. So head over to manscaped.com, type that in. If you want to get your pitch looking as trim, as lush, hopefully not as green though, as the Emirates Stadium turf, head over to manscaped.com, and we thank them for their very kind sponsorship. Right, let's go on to the game against Leeds. Let's turn our attentions a little bit more to that fixture in particular now, and that fixture specifically. Let's dive over to the Premier League's website. I'm not going to bore you guys with the kind of history of the fixture because Arsenal and Leeds, you know, Leeds have been out of the Premier League for so long. Is it really that relevant? But I want to look at the form guide and look at where the two teams are at in terms of their recent performances. Leeds come into the back of this one, having won three of their last five. Of course, their last victory came in a 2-0 home win over Roy Hodgson's Crystal Palace. Arsenal have won just two of their last five and, of course, come into the back of this off of straight defeats. So it's not ideal for Mikel Arteta's side. It's that the form is not ideal. But, of course, Arsenal are at home, and I say that, and then I think about the home form this season and I wonder if that's actually a good thing. But anyway, I don't know if we should read too much into this. I feel like with the form guide, you know, it gives you an indication of where people are at, but ultimately anything can happen on the day. And you're talking about two teams who, or you're talking about Leeds who go anywhere and want to put on a show. You know, Marcelo Bielsa never shies away from it. They never really stray away from their principles, from the way they like to play, which is on the front foot, is to attack people, is to take the game to people. And that might benefit Arsenal, you know, because what we've struggled this season. We have struggled this season to always break down low blocks. It's been a major, major problem for Arsenal. It's been a major, major problem. And with Leeds, what you know is that they're going to come at you, and that should in turn leave spaces in behind. So you can look at this one two ways. You can look at it as though it's a fixture that suits us, or you can look at this as it's a fixture that should scare us, because Leeds have proven that they can go to places like Leicester quite recently, you know, and pull off extremely good results because of what they can do on the counter attack and what they possess in terms of attacking threat. So, yeah, I don't know what the deal is with Leeds, you know, whether it will suit us, whether it will kind of play into our hands, or if actually it will be a major, major problem for us coping with their attacking intent and their attacking ability. I can see there's a conversation going on in the chat from Laps Ramps, who seems to think that Thomas Partey is 35 and not 27. Of course, this guy is obviously the registry, you know, the authority that registers births and stuff. Like, where have you? I'm interested to know where this guy's got this from. Like, I'm genuinely interested to know where this guy's got this from. Like, he goes on to explain. My Spanish Atletico Madrid's friends said Thomas Partey was at the end of his career when they sold him to Arsenal. He's actually not 26. Thomas Partey wants to move to Indonesia or China in 2 years' time. He is around 35. What the hell is that based on? So if your Spanish Atletico Madrid friends told you to go and jump off a cliff, would you do it? If your Spanish Atletico Madrid friends told you to get involved in one of them William Saliba videos, would you do it? Like, it's just, that is not a trusted source, is it? Your friends that support Atletico Madrid. There are lots of people that support Arsenal, but if you listen to what they say and took it as gospel, my God, what would happen to us as a fan base? I'm not going to block people are asking me to block him. I'm not going to block him if it's just an opinion or a different view. But you've said it now. We get it. You don't need to keep spamming the chat with the same thing over and over again. You might want to not listen to your Atletico Madrid friends, because I fear they'll get you in trouble one day. I really do. Right. Anyway, look, now he's still going on. My friend's dad works for Atletico Madrid. They're local Spanish Madrid people. They know this fact. Okay, cool. We get it. Don't want to hear about it again. That's it. Move on. Right. Looking at the season so far, Arsenal and Leeds United. Arsenal currently in 11th. Leeds, of course, in 10th. They are a point ahead of us at the moment. But what's interesting is they've actually played a game less. So Leeds could, if they, you know, if they win that game, that could become 4 points. If they beat us, it could potentially become 7 points between us and Leeds, which is worrying. Leeds create more chances than us per match. They average 1.59 in comparison to Arsenal's 1.17. And even Leeds, who people have ridiculed for the way they defend this season, have more clean sheets in the Premier League than Arsenal this season. They have seven. We have eight. They're just one behind us. That was the point I'm trying to make. Leeds United have almost got as many clean sheets as us. The team who defensively are ranting and raving about how good we are. Leeds, who everybody picks on and everybody pokes fun at because they don't defend, only have one clean sheet less than us. So, yeah. Wow. Wow. But they have, of course, conceded more goals than us. Average goals conceded per match, they concede 1.73. That's almost two goals a game. You know, that's worrying. That is worrying and probably does catch up with you over the course of the season. But, you know, they score at least a couple of goals a game as well, which is very good for a side promoted. Because I think when teams get promoted to the Premier League, one of the difficult things is finding a way of scoring goals. You know, that step up in class is clearly noticeable. And so credit to Leeds for doing that. They've done it a different way. Some teams come up, try to be solid because maybe they fear that they won't be able to score goals. But Marcelo Bielsa's very confident that his team will score goals and therefore is confident enough to play this open and expansive and very, very entertaining style of football. Let's see what else you guys are saying in the live chat. lots of you jumping on the whole Thomas Partey's 35 thing in the chat. That's great banter, that. Brad Lynch says, my sister's cat works at Arsenal FC and Lee Dixon is pushing for a place ahead of Bellerin and Cedric. Love that. Big hello to Sports Genius, who's currently enjoying the Club World Cup. Of course, Bayern Munich taking on Tigres at the moment. Mexican side Bayern are struggling to break them down. I might jump on and watch the rest of that after we finish up here. Maybe watch it with my dinner. Who knows? We got another one. Asir Laim says, I'm from Madrid. That man was right. Partey is not 27. I'm from London, but I don't know everything about everyone in London and all their deepest, darkest secrets. The fact you're from Madrid makes no difference to whether I'm going to believe your opinion or not. The fact that you're from Madrid, right, doesn't mean that you are an accurate source on this. It's madness. It's absolute madness. I promise I'm not going to give it any more attention unless someone else drops a quality comment that I can't help but read out. But yeah, absolute madness. As I said, it's great that you're from Madrid. I'm sure it's a lovely place and, you know, and all of that. But the fact that you're from Madrid makes zero difference to me in terms of the reliability of this claim that you are making. Oh, my God. We got more. Have we got more of these comments coming in? Oh, God. Just stop it. Nobody cares. Nobody gives a shit. Nobody cares. I'm going to go by what the guy's passport says rather than what some guy from Madrid whose dad's sister's cat's dog's friend's cousin works at Atletico Madrid. Oh, my God. I love this from Omar. Torreira is 15, as confirmed by my Atletico Madrid friends. Inter Yanan says, what are they putting in the tapas in Spain? Great stuff. Okay, let's look ahead to my lineup, and I'll explain what the team is that I would go with, and I'll talk a little bit about why I think that team is the right team given what Leeds will be bringing to the table in terms of their tactical approach and what we've seen of Leeds this season. So let's run through my starting 11, and I want to make it clear this is my starting 11. So if Mikel Arteta picks a different one, don't start tweeting me saying you got it wrong, because this is not a prediction, right? This is me giving you the 11 that I would pick. So I'm going to start in goal, and returning from his suspension, clearly Arsenal's number one is Bern Leno. So he goes in there for me. Nice, easy one to start off. working our way across the back four, where we know now that Kieran Tierney is not available. So Cedric should, in my opinion, continue at left back. It's not ideal. Spoken about the fact that I playing a right-footed left back doesn't really work. But beggars can't be choosers at the moment. We don't really have another option. Rob Holding will continue at right centre back for me. I think he's earned it. I think he's been very good of late and deserves his place in the side. At right back, because of Cedric playing over there, that means we don't really have an option but to play Hector Bellerin on the right. And this is the position that's up for contention, isn't it? This left centre back position. Does Gabriel continue there? Does David Luiz return into the side after obviously serving that one match suspension? This might be unpopular, but I think David Luiz was playing really, really well until he received that stupid red card that wasn't even his fault. So David Luiz comes back into the side for me, and I'm going to explain why in a little bit. So hold your horses. Don't get on my case about it yet. In the midfield, Granit Xhaka is one of the first names on the team sheet nowadays. Nailed on starter under Mikel Arteta. Very, very important part of the side. And he continues in that left-sided position of the double pivot. Alongside him, I'm going with Dani Ceballos. I know some people will go with Elneny, but I can understand the argument for Elneny. And the argument is that when Arsenal get caught in the transition, which leads, you know, which Leeds are very good at doing, Elneny offers a bit more of a protective screen. I get that. But for me, I think that we need to be progressive. We need to be proactive. We need to go after this game. And I think that with Dani Ceballos in the side, we're more likely to do that. So that's what I would go with. Sports Genius asks, I'll just quickly pause and answer this question. Do you have members only streams for your membership channels? We don't do a members-only live stream, but we do members-only content. So if you are a gold member or above, you can access the last couple of bits of members-only content, which have been deep dives into Granit Xhaka's importance to the side and why Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang's form has suffered this season. So if you're not a member and you fancy becoming one, click on the link in the description, sign up. I'll be so, so grateful. Come and join our Discord server. You'll be supporting the channel, but also becoming part of our little community that is growing and growing and growing. And it's great. It's great fun. Some lovely people in there. Really good views exchanged respectfully, as you like it to be. It's really good. So we don't do live streams. We might do that in the future. But right now, we're releasing a bit of members content every Wednesday to gold members and above. You can become a red member as well, which is, of course, cheaper. And you still get access to the Discord server. But you know, as well as supporting the channel and getting access to the Discord server, you won't get access to that content because that is for the next tier above. So we had to do something to differentiate the tiers, obviously, to justify the difference in the cost. But yeah, if you fancy joining us, you're more than welcome. Would love you to come over. Right, moving back to the team that I was going through. So in the number 10 position, this is going to be interesting. And I wonder if, had Thomas Partey been fit, Mikel Arteta would have been, well, this would have been an easier decision. Do you bring in Martin Ødegaard here? Let me know in the chat. Would you bring him in? Or do you think that because of the issues that we've got at the weekend, because there's already so much disruption to the starting 11, do you think that he will just go for the safer option, the tried and tested Emile Smith Rowe in this system? Let's see. I'm going to go with Ødegaard because I think Emile Smith Rowe looked a little bit leggy the other day. And I've always been conscious of the need to protect him. You know, he's a young, talented footballer with the world at his feet, but he cannot be relied on. He shouldn't be relied on. And I worry that the pressure when he's maybe not 100% fit is going to be a problem. I also think that Martin Ødegaard, when he came on against Aston Villa, although he missed that chance and a lot of people have made a thing out of that, he actually impressed me. I thought he looked really lively. I thought he looked really, you know, really good on the ball, really sharp, good movement. So for me, Ødegaard comes into the side. Up front, I think that picks itself. Alexander Lacazette has been very good of late. Not his greatest game at Aston Villa, but obviously he's key in linking up the play between Arsenal, Arsenal's attacking midfielder, the wide forwards and the rest of the team. You know, the transition between defence and attack is very reliant upon him if not receiving the ball and bringing other people into the game, then dropping deep, creating spaces in behind himself, and being a little bit of a wall that those attacking players can bounce off. On the right, again, this one picks itself. Bukayo Saka has been excellent of late, has really made this position his own. So I look forward to seeing Bukayo Saka play there. Now, this is another big decision. Aubameyang's played half an hour, right, in the last couple of Premier League games. He's come on as a substitute because we know that Aubameyang missed some time, you know, from training because of obviously what was going on with his mum. And I completely accept that. That's a very good reason to be away, and nobody's begrudging him that in the slightest. But is he... I would argue that without Aubameyang on that left-hand side, Arsenal have a greater balance. But I also think that with Aubameyang, you get a improved goal threat. Now, I know this season it always hasn't gone always that well, but in his last home game at the Emirates Stadium, he bagged the brace against Newcastle United. So this is where I'm struggling. I am really struggling with this one because on the one hand, I'm thinking I would go Pepe here because Pepe's played well lately, and to drop Nicolas Pepe now would just be such a kick in the balls to him because he has played well, and you can't sit there and moan about the guy and say he doesn't apply himself and he doesn't care. And then when he does turn up and when he does start making an impact, when he does start making things happen, scored a great goal at Wolves, you know, did some good things at Aston Villa as well. Yeah, you know, it's a hard one, isn't it? Me, just about, I would go with Nicolas Pepe, but I fear, I don't fear because he's not a bad player, but I do suspect that Mikel will bring Aubameyang back onto that left-hand side. And what I do fear is the way that will make Nicolas Pepe feel, because he's clearly someone that's reliant on confidence. He's clearly someone that needs love, you know, but it just feels... It feels like Aubameyang is the one that Mikel will probably go with. That's my gut feeling, because he is the captain, because he has showed loyalty by staying at the club, because Mikel Arteta rates him so highly and sees him as such a key cog in this squad. I fear that Arteta will go with Aubameyang, but I do think that the team has far greater balance with Nicolas Pepe on the left. And another reason why I think that Nicolas Pepe should play on the left over Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang is because of this man, because of Cedric. When you're talking about a right-footed fullback, you know, coming down the flank, the good thing here is where normally with Aubameyang and Tierney, you know, Tierney goes on the outside, Aubameyang drifts in. The fact that Cedric is right-footed, if you play Aubameyang there as well, then it's very clear and obvious what you're going to do every single time you get the ball in those areas. You'll always be looking to cut in. Whereas with Cedric, you know, and Pepe, you'd get a bit of variation because you would get Cedric cutting infield and then Pepe using his stronger left foot can go on the outside. So I think that playing those two gives us that variation, you know, Cedric coming infield, Pepe going on the outside. Whereas if you play, if you play Cedric and Aubameyang, you're going to have two players cutting inside. And I don't think that that's necessarily going to be effective because teams want to show you inside more often than not because that's where they got the most numbers. That's how they like to defend. That's my thoughts on that. That is what I would do. Some of you calling for Martinelli to play. I don't know. I don't think he deserves a start right now. To be honest, I think that Nicolas Pepe's just been in far better form and so needs to continue in the side. He's not done anything for me that suggests he should be dropped. So that's the team I would go with. For those of you listening on the audio, let me just run through that one more time. Bern Leno in goal, back four of Hector Bellerin, Rob Holding, David Luiz and Cedric. In the midfield, it's Xhaka, Ceballos and Ødegaard just ahead of them with Saka on the right, Pepe on the left and Lacazette up front. Now, I mentioned to you guys that there was a reason for me picking David Luiz, and I'm going to just explain that to you here now. Let me just bring the counters in for the Leeds United players. So we know that Marcelo Bielsa's side like to play in this 4-1 system. You know, there are doubts now as well over the availability of Calvin Phillips, which could be huge for Leeds as well. You know, he's been a real important part of their team. We know that they have other capable players, of course, and Patrick Bamford, who's expected to lead the line for them, is particularly important. So this is how Leeds are expected to line up, 4-1-4-1. You see it so often. They try and play out from the back. They try and play passes into they try and play passes into this player here, whether that's Calvin Phillips or whoever it is. And we saw them against Man City right at the start of the season. It was a game I commentated on. And I know there will be more recent examples, but the reason that one comes to my head is because I was working on it and I was very focused on it, where if you press that player right and if you put them under pressure, Marcelo Bielsa will never turn around and say, let's play it long because we're in trouble here. He will continue with it. That's what Marcelo Bielsa does. He continues. That's his way of playing. It's from the fullback, from the centre back. It's in to Calvin Phillips here or whoever plays that role on the day. And their job is then to be able to distribute the ball out to these guys and progress the ball forward. So when it comes to Leeds United, if you can shut off this player, if you can find a way of pressing them effectively in this area here, apologies. Where's the circle? Oh, God. Definitely not Andy Gray, am I? Where is it? There we go. That's the one I want. If you can press them in this area here, you can cause Leeds United problems. So you need to press that player. You need to do it quickly. And whether that is the job of Alexander Lacazette or the job of Martin Ødegaard or Emile Smith-Rowe, if he's the one that plays there, I don't know. But the point is that player there is key to everything Leeds do. He's key to the way they build up. And Marcelo Bielsa, for all his positives, for all the great things that are always said about him, he is as stubborn as an old mule and he will not change that. He will not drift away from that, right? So that's the key. You can dispossess Leeds in that kind of area and get onto their back four, which aren't very good. That is the key to beating Leeds United. Also, when Leeds United do attack, they squeeze teams up. That's what Leeds United do. We saw it at Elm Road at the beginning of the season. They caused us untold problems. I looked back at the stats today and Leeds United had double the attempts at goal that Arsenal had that day at Elland Road. And some of us were bloody sick coming away from that saying we should have won it because we missed, Saka missed that one chance. Do you remember? So it's madness. But the reason I've decided that I want David Luiz in the side is because Leeds, as I said, they're not going to let up. They're relentless. They're going to pressurise us. And whether it's Pepe or whether it's Aubameyang on the left, what I want to see from that player is the play on the last shoulder of the defender, particularly Leeds' right fullback. If it is Ayling, Ayling likes to get forward. You know, he's got the fitness and he's very good and he causes teams problems in the attacking third as well. But I want to see these players. I want to see Saka. I want to see Pepe or Aubameyang, whoever it may be. I want to see these guys playing on the shoulder of the Leeds United defenders. I also want to see Lacazette dropping into these kind of areas because what that does is you bring the central defenders in, you kind of drag them in towards you. And what that does is when David Luiz is on the ball, if Arsenal, instead of playing the quick transition and playing 10 passes to get up the pitch, we know that David Luiz has the capability to, wrong marker, here we go. There it is. We know that David Luiz has the ability to play in a ball like that, either that way or this way. And we know that David Luiz can release players with one pass from that position. That's what David Luiz has that no other Arsenal centre-back has in their locker. He has the ability to play a ball like that and open someone up. Now, you know, Lacazette dropping that little bit deeper, like he did in the FA Cup final so effectively, creates spaces in these kind of areas here, you know, these inside left and inside right channels, right? That's what Lacazette can do. He can create you spaces here and those spaces should be hopefully exploited by the pace of Pepe, by the pace of Saka, or if it's Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang getting into those inside left positions, we know how devastating he can be. So playing David Luiz at centre-back, who's defended very well in recent times, you know, and barring the Wolves game aside, I don't even blame him for that. But, you know, apart from that, his record lately has been pretty unblemished. He's been really good in some games. And I feel like he gives us the ability to not just play in one way, to be a little bit more direct against the side who we know are going to try and squeeze us into our own half, regardless of being away from home. Leeds United will not sit back and defend at the Emirates Stadium. Why? Because it's not in their DNA. They don't do it. So I feel like having David Luiz in the defence just gives us an alternative option, an option to go long and an option to go long accurately. We're not talking about hopeless, hopeless hoofs up the pitch. We're talking about a player who's capable of getting the ball, controlling it with one touch and hitting the channels that Pepe, Saka or Aubameyang, whoever it is that plays on the flanks that day, will be able to exploit. Wesberg points out as well in the chat that what we do without the ball is massive. Yeah, it's huge. It's huge in terms of the defensive work that we're going to do. There's no doubt about that. It's massive. So that's where I am. That's where I am on the game against Leeds. And we'll talk a little bit more about it on tomorrow's stream as well. So if you've got any questions, feel free to drop them in the comments after the stream ends. And I'll pick some of those up on the show tomorrow. But for now, that's it. I'm going to leave you with a prediction. And my prediction is Leeds United. No, we're at home. Arsenal 3, Leeds United 1. That's my prediction for the game between Arsenal and Leeds taking place on Valentine's Day. Take this as a reminder. If you haven't bought your missus or your other half a card, get on with it. What are you waiting for? I stupidly tried to order one on Moonpig, but I don't think they come that quickly. So I'm going to have to go out and get one. But yeah, that's it. That brings us to the end of the show. Don't forget, this show is sponsored by manscaped.com. So if you are looking to get your gentlemanly regions as fresh, as lush and as trim as the Emirates Stadium turf, then head over to manscaped.com. Get involved. You can use the promo code, which is 90min20, so 90min20. Enter that, you get 20% off, and you will get you'll get free shipping as well. So you might as well use it. You might as well cash in on it. And a big thank you to them for their kind sponsorship. Right, that brings us to the end of the show. I'll be back tonight with the Social Club. So come and join me if you fancy it. 9 p.m. I'll be joined by Simon Alavi and Dan DeLuca once more. We'll be poking a bit of fun at DeLuca because of Tottenham's defeat yesterday. We'll be looking ahead to this weekend's Premier League games. And we'll be ranking some of England's newly emerged creative talent in a list. So we're going to be probably talking about Saka, Foden, Madison. We had another one on the list. I can't remember. But anyway, we're going to be ranking those guys in terms of how Grealish was the other one, in terms of how they can help England in the Euros. Who's the best? What do they bring to the table? We'll be looking ahead to the weekend's games and just having a good old general chat. So until then, take care, and we shall see you then. Cheers.
You're listening to the Chronicles of Aguna, the Arsenal podcast.
I'm Martin Tyler, and you're listening to Harry Simeon.